You seem hungry. Good thing your table is ready with Fatterday Omaha.
Fatterday Omaha.
Eat this.
Hey, this is Dave with Fatterday Omaha, and I am sitting in studio with yet another wonderful guest from our Omaha food community. I have eaten at the restaurant, which this chef now resides, many, many times, and I saw him in the restaurant, and for some reason my brain did not click on who he was, and the name should have tipped me off, and it didn't. But that's okay, because that has been rectified now. Because before I knew Chef Clayton Chapman as Chef Clayton Chapman, I just knew him as Clayton, because I walked into the restaurant and that would be Untamed Kitchen. But more importantly, my guest here today is Clayton Chapman. Clayton, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much, first of all, for taking time out of your day, because I'm sure as busy, you were probably down at the restaurant, would be my guess, maybe, you know, working on a menu or something like that. So thanks for being here in general.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate the opportunity.
From what I understand, you started cooking in the industry like at 15, somewhere around there.
Yeah, it's been a while.
And then you've had, you know, write-ups in like Bon Appetit and many, many other places. And so you've been doing things at a pretty high level for quite a while. But how'd you get your start in food?
Yeah. You know, when people ask me that question, I laugh and I say bad luck, but that's really not the truth. I did start at a pretty young age as a teenager, and, you know, 20 years ago, really the only industry that teenagers, you know, could go into at such a young age, 14, 15 years old, was hospitality.
Sure, sure.
So I actually started in fast food. My first job ever was at Subway. I was a sandwich artist.
Ooh, very nice, very
nice. Yes, absolutely. And then my parents actually moved outside of Omaha, between Omaha and Fort Calhoun.
Okay.
We had a small acreage. And there was a restaurant in North Omaha called Mother's Good Food. I don't know if you remember it.
I don't. Do tell.
It's like a New Orleans-style Cajun from scratch. It was owned and operated by two retired Marines. They were like the salt of the earth, two like fantastic gentlemen.
Wow.
Anyway, and so I had started working there as a dishwasher. They'd kind of taken me under their wing. You know, I washed dishes. I'd clean the restaurant. You know, really whatever needed done.
Yeah.
And they allowed me the opportunity to start prepping with them, and then eventually, you know, put me on the line. And, you know, from there, my love for food blossomed. I worked in some other Omaha restaurants while, you know, a young guy in high school and things.
Yeah.
And then I eventually went to culinary school in Chicago.
Wow. And that's one of those things about dishwashers, too. Like, if your dishwasher isn't awesome, like, everything else can fall apart, too. So that's a really key position that maybe people don't think about all the time.
Absolutely. You know, we always say it's the most important position in the restaurant. Yeah. You know, it's like really like the backbone of everything we do is that position.
So obviously sandwich artist and then dishwasher. you know, assembling things. But good to start getting that experience with what it feels like to be in a restaurant. And then at the restaurant there, did they pull you from dishwasher then to, you know, putting you on the line? Was it kind of a start there? Or did you go straight from washing dishes to culinary school?
No.
Okay.
There was a progression. It was like, right, the most natural progression one can take in the restaurant. It was like dishwasher to prep cook to line cook. And then when I felt like I had, you know, gained as much experience as I could for that particular opportunity, I moved on to another restaurant in Omaha.
Gotcha. And then culinary school in Chicago?
Yep. I went to the Illinois Institute of Art, downtown Chicago.
Fantastic. And what was that experience like?
You know, it was really eye-opening. I think it, like, culinary school is great because it provides a foundation, right? And it teaches you how to, you know, conduct yourself in a, like, a professional kitchen.
Yeah.
Because there's definitely a difference between a lot of restaurant kitchens and a professional kitchen.
Yeah.
And so it, you know, it gives you the opportunity to, you know, to learn those things. And I worked at a restaurant called True while I was in culinary school. Which is kind of like a fine dining mainstay in Chicago. And that was really where I felt like I gained like my most, you know, culinary knowledge or culinary experience.
Yeah, yeah. From there then, after graduation, where did that lead you after that?
So I stayed on at True for a while.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, this was like, I mean, it was a kitchen that allowed for the opportunity to like really learn and grow. Yeah, I was very young at the time.
Sure.
And one of the youngest cooks in the kitchen. Hey, you know, this was the type of restaurant where like executive chefs from all over the country would move to Chicago and they would work there as a line cook just for the opportunity to learn. And so it, you know, it was a privilege to be there. I spent a little over 2 years there and left as what was called like a chef de partie or a chef tournant. I would kind of work different stations around the kitchen to cover everyone's days off.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
And then did you return back to Omaha after True?
After True. So I was a little burnt out on, you know, the big city, so to speak.
Yeah.
I am a Midwestern boy at heart. But I had an older brother that was stationed in Togo, West Africa. He was in the Peace Corps.
Okay.
So I actually bought a one-way ticket to Togo.
Yeah.
And I stayed with him for a while. And when my time was up in Togo, I bought another one-way ticket to Europe and did the, like, you know, young American backpacking thing. And I stayed in hostels and, you know, it was a fun adventure. And then I eventually made my way back to Omaha.
Did you do any cooking while you were out there on your adventures or just some eating?
You know, I was a very supportive eater, but I did not actually work anywhere.
And Togo. So I think Nina Soji over at Okra here in town, I think is from Togo.
Yes.
So very, very cool. So awesome. Yeah, that is one of those things that I would love to do is just go to Africa or Europe and just eat. I think would be fantastic.
But, yeah, the food was fantastic.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, in both places.
That's wonderful. And then so after Europe, back to these United States, did that land you back in Omaha then?
It did. And actually, Omaha was always, you know, truth be told, it was intended to just kind of be a landing pad as I, you know, had the opportunity to like regroup and collect myself before my next culinary adventure began. You know, I was still young. I was 21 at the time.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to be out in Northern California where this kind of like, you know, ethos of supporting your local food ecosystem and knowing where your food comes from and, you know, the farm to table movement was like really prevalent. Yeah, Omaha was intended to kind of be a quick stop, and I was offered the opportunity at the time to take the executive chef position at V-Mertz in the Old Market.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right, fine dining mainstay. They've been in Omaha since the 70s. And so I just kind of made the decision that, you know, I could go out to Northern California and kind of be part of something that was already in motion, or I could stay and kind of help be that catalyst of change, so to speak.
Mertz has turned out quite a few awesome folks there from that kitchen, from what I understand.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's some great talent that comes out of that kitchen.
So at Mertz for a while, and then did that lead you then to Grey Plume?
Almost.
Almost. Aha, there's something in between
there. There was a stop in between. Yep, so after V Mertz, I did run Spencer's for Steaks and Chops.
Oh, yeah.
At the Hilton Garden Inn downtown.
Yeah.
Which is now run by executive chef Glenn Wheeler, which, man, he is fantastic. Dude is a rock star.
Yeah.
But yeah, while I was at Spencer's, I was there for about a year and a half, and then in the process of opening the Grey Plume.
Did Glenn take over for you post, when did you swap out there?
And, yeah. Glenn took over after I left and he is still going.
Yeah. I thankfully friends with him on the social medias and see his posts sometimes. He's cooking a lot of nice things at home too. He's pretty capable guy right there.
So. Yeah. I have so much respect for him. He's just super talented.
Awesome. Well, and I think he's had a lot of influence too with, again, much like Mertz, I think a lot of people have come through Glenn's kitchens of varying locations or whatever and you know, really blossomed from there too. So
yeah, 100%.
Yeah, he's okay raising those little birdies up and letting them leave the nest, so to speak. That's
awesome.
Yeah,
you bet.
So unfortunately, I was never able to dine at Grey Plume.
Okay.
So for those, because it is now closed, was in Midtown, correct?
It was, yes.
For those that didn't get a chance to eat there, maybe a quick summary. Tell me a little bit about the Plume and maybe how your involvement or whatever was surrounding Grey Plume.
Yeah, absolutely. So Grey Plume was kind of the culmination of, you know, everything that I believed in culinary wise, and really that restaurant matched how I was, you know, the lifestyle of my life as well. So
yeah,
we were what I like to call approachable fine dining, or, you know, non-pretentious fine dining. We wanted it to still be fun. So we worked with like over 75 growers and really like the Heartland area.
Yeah.
Nebraska, Iowa, Kansas, Missouri. And we made absolutely everything from scratch. So we practiced like a whole animal butchery program. We were bringing in whole beef, whole bison, whole pigs, whole lamb, whole fish. And we would use everything head to tail.
Wow.
All of our produce was very seasonal. So that meant in the winter months, our options were pretty limited. But we would prepare in the summer. And so like our first summer, even before we opened the restaurant, we canned over 10,000 jars of like pickles, preserves, marmalades, you know, things of that nature to supplement the menu to get us through. I mean, we churned our own butter, we baked our own bread, like we literally made the ketchup that went on our burgers. So it was really an incredible experience. So to kind of match that same mindset of our food sourcing, we really felt in order to like be, you know, authentic in that mission, that our business practices needed to match the food sourcing. So we partnered with the Green Restaurant Association. So they are a nonprofit based out of Boston.
Okay.
And they're basically a certifying body for hotels, restaurants, institutions, just to kind of like better green their practices.
Okay.
It's based on like a star system. Okay. You know, like, so that could be everything from like, do you use compostable to-go ware? Are you sourcing locally? Are you sourcing organic? But by their standards, we were actually the greenest restaurant in the country and the first to participate in what they call a sustainability build.
Uh-huh.
And so like everything in the building, right? Recycled barnwood flooring, recycled steel framing, recycled insulation. Now it's very standard, but, you know, 15 years ago, it wasn't like low and zero VOC paints, you know, low flow water aerators. We were making plates out of recycled wine bottles and, you know, using like a local potter and local Nebraska clay for a lot of our china. So it was wonderful. We were open for 10 years.
That had to be very fulfilling, I think, to do something of that level.
It was for a very long time.
And also, that sounds satisfying, but also exceedingly complex to manage because you're not taking the easy path on anything there.
No. And I think that's probably, you know, what eventually, and we can talk about that if you want to, about the reason why we decided to close up shop. But it was like very, very all encompassing. It took a lot to run.
It sounds like you probably had a really good team, though, to make all that happen.
Fantastic team. I mean, the only way that we, you know, operated so successfully for 10 years was because it was all about our team.
Where does your driving force for doing these things at that level come from? I be it the sustainability or just the focus on local. I mean, there's a book out there, Soul of a Chef. And that sounds like a little bit of what we're getting into here, but tell me a little bit about the Clayton Chapman ethos, if you will.
Okay, cool. Actually, that is a fantastic book. I read that in culinary school. But I think a lot of it, you know, like my background was in fine dining. That's all I knew.
Sure.
Right? Like, and that's just, I started in fine dining at a pretty young age. So that's like, that's really how my brain worked. That's how like I developed flavors, you know, at least in my head from conceptualization to plate. As far as like the green practices, I think that's just the way I was raised.
Yeah.
You know, I came from a very, you know, humble family. Both parents worked, both worked hard. We didn't really waste anything. My mom gardened every summer.
Yeah.
We canned things with her in the fall. So that was just maybe like embedded throughout.
Yeah, just kind of built in.
It was built in. And then I think when you grow up in the States and you visit a third world country at a pretty young age, it's kind of eye-opening or it's a little bit awake. You know, I wasn't in like South Africa where there's a lot of similarities to the rest of the world.
Sure.
Togo is, you know, very underprivileged, mm-hmm. and it's just really kind of eye-opening. So when you come back from that, you really develop this, like, no-waste attitude, right?
Yeah.
Because that's, like, the responsible thing to do.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a couple of parallel lines there. Just the being a chef and our local MCC Culinary Institute has some rules that they follow as part of being a chef, and one of those is waste nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You can look at that from a food perspective, or in this case, from a sustainability perspective, and how can we use those things and respect the ingredients and also respect producers and the things that are not only making up the table from a food perspective, but literally making up the table.
Yeah, so absolutely.
That's cool. I first encountered you at Untamed Kitchen, mm-hmm. which is a relatively new concept and restaurant in the Omaha area.
It is.
So let's travel down the street, not far from where Grey Plume was, to Untamed Kitchen.
Yes, absolutely. So I'll backtrack just a little bit.
Please.
So 2020, COVID hit.
Yeah.
And all restaurants closed their doors temporarily, right? And, you know, we were no different to that. And we did some like pop-ups and things, you know, through 2020. And as it kind of like came time to, you know, reopen and recollect our team, mm-hmm. we asked ourselves some like really hard questions of like, what do we want the next 10 years to look like, right? Mm-hmm. And really, you know, so I'm blessed. I have 4 children.
From
15 all the way to 2.5.
Nice.
It's a wide spread.
Yes.
But really kind of came to the conclusion that I wanted to be more present, right? Mm. I wanted to be part of like their everyday life, and I didn't want the next 10 years to be like the last 10.
Gotcha.
So we made the decision to close the doors and go out on a high note.
Yeah.
And then I said, and I'll never do restaurants again. Unless it checks all the boxes, which for me, it was, I really would only like to be part of a restaurant that is somewhere that I would like to eat every day, mm-hmm. food that I would like to feed my family, mm-hmm. that is everyday approachable, and that is super scalable.
Mm, nice. Okay.
So those were like the parameters we set.
Yeah.
Flash forward a couple years later,
yeah.
Enter Alex Harrington. So Alex Harrington, from Illinois,
uh-huh.
school in Iowa, then moved to Omaha. He lives in Omaha with his wife and his 2 sons and owns all of the Picklemans in Omaha.
Yeah.
So like, right, very engaged and involved in the community, great operator. And Alex approached me a few years ago. He said, hey, I have this idea for a restaurant concept that is, you know, a health and wellness brand.
Mm-hmm.
Are you interested in, you know, talking to me about it?
Uh-huh.
And it was just like, after our first conversation, it was just like off to the races.
Oh, wow.
There was just a lot of similarities between, you know, the type of restaurant that we wanted to put together, the food that we wanted to offer, really like the ethos and the staff support and all those things behind it. And a couple years later, here's Untamed Kitchen.
Untamed Kitchen. What is Untamed Kitchen?
Fair enough. We like to say Untamed Kitchen is like a health and wellness restaurant. It's everyday approachable.
Yeah.
So it's like it's a healthier version of fast food. So we offer grain bowls, salads, smoothies, wraps. But the menu is, you know, like well curated or chef driven.
Yeah.
But we do also offer like a build your own option. So if you want to like come in and say you want to be your own chef for the day and you want to start putting all the pieces together, you can certainly do that as well.
Having been in numerous times, I appreciate the fact that you guys are open on a Monday, because sometimes it's a little hard to find food out there on a Monday. So just saying. But the ingredients that you have at Untamed Kitchen are just awesome. You get a grain bowl, or I really dig the salads, and you're getting a dressing or, you know, a green goddess or whatever. The bowls are very balanced, in my opinion. It's like you get a good level of vegetables, grain, protein, things like that. And this is not like David's Fatterday like sales pitch. I'm just saying, I really enjoy and feel healthy when I eat there, but I don't feel like it's like, oh, you know, you got stuck with the health bowl. You know, right. It's something you
it's
want.
It's healthy.
Right, ugh. Right. It's something I look forward to eating. I think there's one with beef and like a chimichurri, mm-hmm. and some things like that. So, you know, chef-driven menu, but on a fast, casual model where you have your food at your table in very, very record time, because some of those things are, you know, prepped and ready to go and things like that, is awesome. And I also love the smoothie options, because it's not a big sugar pile or whatever. It's like there's real veggies and fruits and things going into those smoothies, and maybe some ingredients too, like, you know, tamarind, that you might not see in your average, you know, quick to go smoothie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But first, I appreciate you saying all that. So thank you.
Oh, very well.
But yeah, we wanted something that like a different alternative to healthy food, right? Like healthy food can also taste really good.
Yes.
And it can be good for you and you can feel good after you eat it. There's like very simple rules that we kind of follow with our sourcing.
Yeah.
So we actually don't bring in any seed oils. There's only avocado oil in the building. All of our chicken is like pasture raised, pasture finished. Our beef is grass fed and grass finished. You know, and those are just like some really simple things, but important things to us. And there's no sugar in the building.
Nary a sugar packet or cube in the building, huh?
We have like honey and agave and things, but yeah.
So less refined bleached products and things like that. More a whole food type, not the grocery store, but a whole food message there or plan for your menu.
Yeah.
How did you go about deciding what's on the menu at Untamed? What was this, you know, Clayton sits down and starts planning? Did you have some things you knew you wanted? I have never planned a full restaurant menu, especially one that is like what you have at Untamed. So what was the build process? How did that happen?
Yeah, so this was actually a really different experience for me. This was my first opportunity to really take a stab at a fast casual or a fast food sort of menu.
Yeah.
You know, with my experience being in fine dining, you're cooking everything like what we would say like a la minute or to order, very last minute, like you might prep certain vegetables, but you're re-searing them or you're cooking your steaks to order. And this is completely different, right? Like mm-hmm. you are able to walk in the door, order your food, and have it in 3 minutes. And so there's so many other variables to think about. How is something going to hold in a steam table? Or if we cook this off and it sits in a water well, like what's the texture going to be like? How is it going to translate to the guest? And so, yeah, it was a process for sure.
Did you have a crew that helped decide what was going to be on the menu? Like, well, we're doing steak and chimichurri, or we're doing, I think I have yet to have this one, but that buffalo chicken bowl looks kind of tasty. So like, how do you decide what actually gets on there?
Yeah, excellent question. So I am blessed in life with my better half,
awesome.
Heather Smith. I think it originally started with her and I like walking into the Whole Foods grocery store, and we literally bought every produce, every grain. It's like the fullest grocery cart you can
imagine.
One
of everything, please.
One of everything. And then how I normally write a menu is I'll have a piece of paper and I'll have grains, vegetables, proteins, sauces in different categories, and I'll start to mix match, right? And cross things out. I'm like, oh, I used that one here. Can't use it again. And so it was a trial and tribulations of cooking a lot of things, putting them together, thinking about how it would translate over to that type of restaurant, putting together, you know, version 1.0, cooking through it, having Alex try it, have Heather try it, have myself try it, have a panel of people try it. Okay, let's change a few things, back to the drawing board. And we've done that a number of times. And again, since we've opened, we've changed the menu a few times.
And that also helps you be able to, you know, flex your creativity a little bit as a chef, right? So, I mean, and you guys do like weekly specials or daily specials or things like that also every once in a while, if I recall. Is that
yeah,
true?
Every once in a while. And we're starting to do more of it. Uh-huh. You know, with any like new concept, there's always some kinks to work out.
Sure.
It is just the nature of the beast. But we are like getting to that point of where we can offer more features and things.
Gotcha. Yeah, I was just kind of thinking of the A-frame sandwich board outside, and maybe that's just a rotating, hey, by the way, we have this type note. So that's cool. So you were mentioning some things that you had to reroute or that might have been like, ooh, this wasn't like planned. Anything that you would be willing to talk about where it's like, oh man, that just didn't work and we had to pivot and do something else. And I didn't prep you for this question. So
you
that's
did
okay.
not, but that's okay. I don't mind being put on the spot. You know, I don't think that there was anything that was like an absolute disaster.
Sure.
So that, I think that's very fair to say, knock on wood.
Yeah.
But there were just a few things like we, you know, like the vegetables that we offer. So like we don't offer like any, like say white potatoes per se. Not that there's anything wrong with great carbs. I love eating carbs, but
sure.
We would say offer sweet potatoes instead.
Yeah.
Just because they're
They have more nutritional value to them. I think it's like little things about how long to sear or steam broccoli for, knowing that when you come in, you might not eat it for 30 minutes you know, after we made it. But just like developing the mindset that, I mean, we're cooking food all day long to make sure that it's, you know, fresh for the guest.
Yeah.
That maybe I didn't think through in the beginning, but something that came pretty naturally, I think, after we got open.
Being able to combine ingredients too, because you're not serving two chicken thighs and some sauce, or things are diced or made a little bit smaller so they work on a bowl or in a salad, so you can adapt to those different things. The holding there too, so my I come in and the broccoli isn't mushy, or cooking it far along enough too, so that maybe when it sits there for that, you know, first 5 minutes or something, right when the door opens, that it's okay still, and it's not underdone where it's like, oh, I'm chewing on, you know, wood, you know. So there's some middle ground there.
There is definitely a middle ground that we had to find.
So moving to that fast casual or fast food, and I love the fact that it is healthy and fast at the same time, because quite often those two things don't always mix. It's like, oh, I'm going to run through the drive-thru and end up with a salt strange ingredient bomb, versus being able to get something where it's like, oh, I'm happy I ate there today and it was tasty and I didn't feel like I, you know, blew my nutritional specifications for the day or whatever. But were there any other adjustments as far as, you know, you growing up fine dining and then moving over to that fast casual, that maybe were just things that you either didn't think about, or maybe it's like, oh, hey, we need to do this like way different or anything like that?
I don't know if it's that we have decided that we need to do things way different.
Yeah.
But I think that there's like a lot of that fine dining technique, so to speak, in the background that you would never notice. Right? Uh-huh. Like, just like for an example, fine dining world, and people that listen to this that like work in restaurants and they hear the word puree, they'll know exactly what I'm talking about. but a lot of times, you know, fine dining, like a pureed vegetable would go down on like the base of a plate, and then you would kind of build your plate up from there, right? Like whether it's starch or grains or vegetables, and then your protein, and then your sauce, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
I mean, we kind of follow that same mindset. We just don't talk about it. So we'll do like a rice, and then we'd have like a base sauce, whether it's carrot or sweet potato or roasted tomato or buffalo or a green pepper. And then we kind of build flavors up from there, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a fine dining mindset.
Uh-huh.
But we just, it's not.
Yeah, no, that makes sense, where it's not a shift. You're integrating what you know into that, which is kind of cool. And I think that comes out in the dish. It's like somehow you end up with a fine dining, fast casual dish somehow.
And I don't, you know, we don't like really talk about it. And I don't know if a normal guest would even notice, but they would just might say, well, this tastes really good.
For sure.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. And that's the ultimate what you want anyway. You
exactly.
want to see a smile on somebody's face. So how has the reception been downtown? Have people been enjoying the food there? I mean, I know they have, because I've been there, and I know I saw Sarah Baker Hansen there as well the other day when I was leaving. So there's some Omaha folks eating down there for sure.
Yeah, you bet. We are very fortunate that the feedback has been great.
And this is a concept you had kind of mentioned earlier in our talk that is maybe a little more scalable than something like Grey Plume, where that would be quite the effort. So, talk about the scalability. What's scalable about Untamed?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was, you know, just from like an aesthetic perspective, right? You know, Alex was very smart early on to bring on a great marketing team. So we partnered with Secret Penguin, who did a lot of like, logo development and branding and things like that. So just from like a physical restaurant perspective, it is pretty easy to replicate. From a culinary perspective and from a menu-wise, it's very easy to take what we've built and kind of rinse and repeat. And you know Alex is a multi-unit operator, and something that I would love to do is to scale it. That's really kind of the long-term goal, is to you know, continue to grow our downtown location and kind of do this proof of concept.
Yeah.
And then see where it goes from there.
And how did you go about building up your team for Untamed Kitchen, the people that are helping you? Because I see some friendly faces there that are there quite often when I walk in. So yeah. how'd you build
you
your
bet.
Team?
Our team is fantastic, by the way.
I agree.
Thank you. You know, it's interesting because we really look to hire the things that you like can't teach, right? Mm-hmm. Like you said, you've seen friendly, familiar faces.
True.
So ultimately, we look for good human beings is what it all boils down to, right? Like we look for somebody that's kind and honest and genuine and that maybe has some authenticity in the way that like they lead their life outside of work, that maybe it kind of mirrors a little bit of the restaurant philosophy that, you know, maybe they care about exercise or they care about what they eat or they live a, you know, a good lifestyle, so to speak.
Yeah.
Because I think everything that we're doing is very teachable, right? The food isn't incredibly complex. It's well thought out, if that makes sense.
Sure.
But it's simple. It's just, I guess, very well thought out. And so you can teach somebody with very, very little experience how to do the things that we're doing, but you can't teach somebody how to be a good person. And so we're looking for, you know, people that developed those skills a long time ago.
That's one of those things, having been in and around management for a little while too, is soft skills, being personable and having good communication and interaction. Those things are very hard to teach. And it's like, you know, you can probably teach somebody how to cook. You've been doing this a long time. You've been a chef at a lot of different places. It's like, okay, here's how we do this at Untamed Kitchen. But yeah, you're right. You know, just having that person that's at the counter. And what's kind of interesting is Untamed Kitchen, you can see into the entire kitchen. You know what's going on. You can see that everything is clean, that everything, you know, your mise en place, everything is all set up and ready to go. But all the faces behind the counter, whether that's the person at the register helping you decide what to eat or the person that is, you know, plating your food, you know, everybody's engaged along the way. So you can definitely get that read across your team, which is very, very cool.
Yeah,
so.
I appreciate it. We are definitely an open book that way.
Well, and it's nice for the diner as well. You know, your guest is that they can see their food. So that's kind of cool. There's a book, it's called Hot Box. It's a story about the catering industry.
Okay. I don't know it.
And it's a very interesting read. So there's these two writers and they decided that they were actually going to learn and start working in the catering industry and write a book about it. But all the prep and things are done in a prep kitchen away from the venue.
For sure.
You know, so everything has to be boxed up and travel. And it's very likely that the person that cut that onion never gets to see the guest that gets to eat that onion. We talked a little bit earlier about soul of a chef and the fact that a lot of people get into the restaurant industry or want to cook because they like seeing that smile on someone's face. And I think it's got to be hard if you're doing all that work and you never get to see somebody's face light up and go, that was tasty, you know. And I think that's cool about Untamed. If you're back there prepping or plating and you look out over the thing and see that diner there finishing that bowl or just, you know, with the smile on their face, I think that's really cool. So you get the two-way interaction there as well.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Very cool. Very cool. So you guys have the smoothies there as well. I've had a bunch of them, but what goes into the smoothies for those that have not had them? Because you kind of have a wide variety and the ingredients, like I said, like tamarind and things like that may not show up in other smoothies.
You bet. Yeah. So the smoothies were a lot of fun for me in the menu development because they're real ingredients, right? There's like fruits and vegetables in all of them.
Yeah.
There's no added sugar and then there's actually no dairy in them. So like we're using coconut milk or oat milk and different things, but they're, in my humble opinion, they're all very delicious.
Yes.
Having children, I've made a lot of smoothies over the years, right?
Sure.
Sometimes that's like the only way to slide a piece of broccoli or spinach into something without them noticing.
Right.
So we have five smoothies on the menu and we tried to like really cover all the bases. So we have a superfood smoothie, which is full of berries and spinach and chia and orange juice. We have a tropical immunity, which is going to be like your ginger, your carrots, your oranges, your pineapple, peaches, things like that. We have a green detox, which is kiwi, green apple, celery, spinach, you know, all of your green foods.
Yeah.
The tamarind smoothie that you're speaking about is our chakra balance.
Ah, there you go. Yep.
Which has like a wide variety of like passion fruit and tamarind. It's like really, you know, it is our most unique smoothie that's on the menu. Like like you had said, it's just people aren't necessarily used to those flavor combinations.
Sure.
But I still think it does... the flavors do really well together.
Yeah.
And then our last is what we call our all-day chocolate, which is a mix of nut butters, cocoa powder. There's like a mushroom powder in it, dark cherries, bananas, oat milk, and protein powder.
That's awesome. So quite a wide variety of ingredients, and so no sugar, no dairy in any of them.
Correct.
That's wild. That's wild.
So, yeah, they're all made with you know, coconut milk and oat milk and things like that.
That's awesome. Oh yes, and I should clarify for those that come in, no added granulated sugar. There is sugar within the ingredients within the smoothie, right?
Yes. So, okay. Wholeheartedly.
So obviously you can do things that are dairy free, and you said that you don't use any seed oil, just avocado oil.
Correct.
So don't have to. I know some people have like, you know, sesame allergies is kind of something that's been popping up maybe a little bit more recently.
Yeah, sesame or soy, or, you know, a lot of folks are staying away from different canola oils and things just because of the inflammation and, you know, things it might cause.
Yeah.
But yeah.
On helping to grow the business and things like that, what are some of the things that Untamed Kitchen is looking to do? Or is, at the moment, is it just making sure that, hey, we've got a nice, tight, single location before we decide to expand, or, you know, maybe anything on the horizon, or what's happening?
That's an excellent question. So short answer is yes, we are hanging tight and making sure that everything is operationally sound.
Yeah.
Before, you know, it's like, right, it's like learning to walk before you run.
Sure.
But we actually started a program called Untamed 5000.
Oh.
And that was a campaign that we launched at the beginning of the year.
Uh-huh.
Because if you believe food is fuel, right? Like you are what you eat and all those things.
Yeah.
We sought out to provide 5,000 free meals for different businesses.
Oh, wow.
And things in the community.
Wow.
So yeah, and it's been going great. So we partner with, you know, different organizations within the Omaha community, and we provide meals for their team to kind of like spread this word that healthy can be delicious.
That's wonderful.
So we're actually just we're on the cusp of wrapping it up.
So success on the 5,000 mission.
Yeah, it's been a lot of meals, but it's been fantastic. And then upcoming, we're participating in the Nebraska Half Marathon in April.
Wow.
So that actually starts and finishes rather. In the park in downtown Omaha, which is just a few blocks from the restaurant.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Gene Leahy is right there. So will you be running in the half marathon?
So I personally will probably not be running.
Uh-huh.
My little brother will be running
on
behalf of Untamed Kitchen.
Nice.
My brother Morgan is like, I mean, honestly, he's like an animal. He does marathons. He does Ironmans. He does 100-mile races. He does like all of those things. So we're super thrilled to have him, you know, representing Untamed Kitchen. And then we're putting together another team of, you know, how many people to be determined.
Yeah.
From Untamed. And then we're going to, you know, engage with different food options and things like that.
So when we were talking about Grey Plume, and we talked about sourcing ingredients, and also, wow, some of the really awesome things you did with, you know, reclaimed wood and glass and things like that, that weren't as common at that time. So for Untamed Kitchen, are there any parallels there as far as local ingredients, local sourcing, and then also sustainability or recyclability of dishes and things like that?
So when we opened Grey Plume, right, like local food sourcing was pretty obsolete because there wasn't a path from A to B.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were really like, we were one of the first restaurants in Omaha to do it alongside The Boiler Room
and
Dante's. Like, the Boiler Room and Dante's were open a little before the Grey Plume was, and they were absolutely pioneers in that. And then we kind of, you know, jumped on board, and we were all trying to like navigate this path together, right?
Right.
So it would be like, I remember when Paul Kulik was still the chef at the Boiler Room,
and yeah.
I'd call Paul and I'd say, hey, we're looking for rabbits. Do you know anybody that, you know, might be raising them? Or he'd call and he'd say, I'm looking for local butter, or I'm looking for honey. And so there was just like this, such a community connection with it. And
yeah.
It's amazing how in the last 10 years, how much that's changed,
mm-hmm.
right? Like the age of farmers.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
There's this new wave of a lot younger folks that
uh-huh.
are, you know, practicing this sustainable farming.
Mm-hmm.
And so the access to local food, at least in Omaha, in my experience, is pretty great.
Yeah, and so the local sourcing for Untamed, then, so many of those ingredients.
Well, so it's interesting. Because a lot of the local food sourcing isn't necessarily scalable.
Sure.
Right? And so it's very applicable for like a single unit restaurant.
Ah, okay.
And especially if you're cooking very seasonally.
Mm-hmm.
And so we tried, you know, in our menu development to like curate a menu that really could be served and eaten year round.
Gotcha.
And so it doesn't totally lend itself to, you know, local food sourcing, but it does lend itself to responsible food sourcing.
Sure.
So where we didn't necessarily go local because, right, like, so what do we do if we have a restaurant in Omaha and you have a restaurant in Phoenix and you have another in Dallas and another in Colorado?
And you need that same bowl on each menu so your
Absolutely.
Consistency is there. Right.
So we found that it was like most important to be responsible in our food sourcing over local in that capacity. So a lot of the ingredients on the menu are organic wherever we had the capacity to find it,
yeah.
and it was financially responsible.
Sure.
That's what we did.
That makes sense. Well, and the other thing is, I know I've brought up tamarind like 90 times, so I'll talk about mangoes. We're probably not growing a lot of mangoes in Omaha too. So some of those ingredients aren't available here. Period. You have
For
to,
sure.
to get them elsewhere. So with that model at Untamed, that consistency of, you know, I come in and I want my steak chimichurri bowl and maybe I want it every Monday because that's my Monday deal
we
or
love
whatever,
if you, did.
You know, right? So
yeah.
you need to have those things. So that makes total sense. And how did you look at the plates or the to-go ware or the things besides the actual ingredients?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and that was something Alex and I were like, we are both 100% on the same page about,
yeah.
is that we want to be able to provide like essentially like a no-waste facility to the best of our ability.
Gotcha.
So I don't know if you're familiar with Hillside Solutions.
Yeah, yeah. I think MCC uses them, actually.
Yes,
yeah.
a lot of folks in town use them. And so we're super blessed to be able to partner with them on things. So all of our to-go-ware, compostable bottoms, recyclable tops, all of our bags are compostable.
Nice.
Our parchment, our wraps are all compostable. Our silverware is compostable. And then, you know, like we use compostable gloves. Our trash bags are compostable. So we recycle, you know, cans, aluminum, things like that.
Yeah.
We recycle glass. We compost. And yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So you can still keep your, you know, your ethos there, even though the type of restaurant concept has changed a little bit, which is very, very cool.
For
so
sure.
That still has to feel very satisfying that, you know, you're able to take your, you know, fine dining background and then just, I think you kind of said it earlier. It's like you may not call it out that these are things that you might do in fine dining, but it comes out through the restaurant just naturally. And it's just a part of what's built into Untamed Kitchen.
Yeah. It's really, I mean, when you like boil it all down.
Yeah.
It's like as simple as just saying like, do the right thing. you
That's
know
perfect.
What I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're trying to do the right thing.
I want to ask you a question that I haven't asked a guest for quite a long time.
Uh-oh.
And that has to do with food memory.
Okay.
And significant moments with food in your life. So I have given a couple examples on the show, but I will bring one up, which would be my mom's crepes. So my mother, when my friends would come over and, you know, we'd have a sleepover or whatever, and we'd all wake up in the morning. Sometimes she would make a really awesome batch of crepes. And as a kid, I always liked them a little more simple. I just wanted a straight crepe with syrup. just like a pancake.
Love it.
But like stacks of them. Mm-hmm. And bless her heart in that she would continually make me and my friends crepes until we just tap out, right? I love those. Or my grandmother's cinnamon rolls. We would have to travel 6 hours to go see her. And she would always have these just perfect cinnamon rolls for me. I'd eat one. I'd play dominoes with my grandfather and grandmother. And that's probably one of the most core, like, food memories in my life.
Yeah, right? That's incredible.
So from your perspective, are there any dishes or experiences maybe that just really stick with you? And it could be past, present, could be yesterday. It doesn't matter. But what are those things that maybe kind of stick in your memory a little bit?
You know, it's interesting because as you were starting to ask me that question, I had a different memory like pinned in my brain.
Oh, interesting.
Until I heard your story.
Uh-huh.
And it sparked a memory that, like, man, I literally haven't thought of in 25 years.
Oh, my goodness.
So similarly, growing up, when I would have a buddy spend the night, my folks would make chocolate malts.
Ooh.
With, like, warm, hot fudge.
Oh, my gosh.
And popcorn. And then that'd be, like, a Friday night or something. And then Saturday morning, my mom would make homemade pancakes, like stacked to the moon.
Yes.
And I remember it was like always a contest, right, to see who could eat the most. And I think the record was like 39 pancakes.
Whoa.
Or something. It was not me who, but yeah, that was pretty special. The memory I was actually thinking of was when I was 17. I participated in a culinary competition in Chicago.
Oh, cool.
It was part of this teen USA thing. So you had to submit a three-course meal to the Art Institute. They picked 10 finalists nationwide. I was one of them.
Wow.
So I flew out to Chicago and, you know, you see these other students there that are with like their culinary director of their school or their culinary coach, and they've got this awesome knife bag. And I showed up with my mom and a knife rolled up in a kitchen towel because I didn't know any better at the time.
I love this.
So long story short, I bombed this competition so bad, but it was a total eye opener.
Yeah.
And you think about like, oh my gosh, I have so much to learn, you know, yada, yada, yada. So afterwards, we were talking with one of the chef judges who actually, flash forward years later, turned into my business partner at the Grey Plume.
Oh, wow.
But we said, okay, his name's Michael Howe, Chef Michael Howe. I said, okay, Chef, where should we go in Chicago to, you know, to get a very memorable meal? And he said, go to True.
Yeah.
So my mother and I ended up going to True, and we did like the multi-course tasting menu. And that was like my first experience into, like, I didn't know that meals like that existed, right? With truffles and foie gras and like, right, all these really fancy things and multiple courses, and you go in the kitchen and you can like eat off of the floor. It's so clean. And I said, all right, I'm gonna work here.
Wow. Both of those stories are fantastic. And I also like that, like, I was expecting like, oh yeah, brought my knife and a towel and whatever, and just destroyed everyone and took first place and won $1 million. It's like, no, this is not the Cinderella story.
No, I don't think I cooked my chicken all the way through and broccoli was burnt it was pretty bad.
What a great learning experience though. And points to you for even having the fortitude to even try something like that. You know? Yeah.
Well, you like don't know what you don't know.
True.
Right? So I think I went into it pretty confident.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Well, that's good though. You have faith in yourself, but I mean, just to be, you know, a little bit away from home, just hanging out with mom in this case. And, you know, it's like, you know, going to the, you know, kids karate competition. Okay. You know, here we go. And mom's rooting for you, or swim meet or whatever. And then, but just to do something like that. And then to have that then lead into someplace that you ended up working at for multiple years. And instead of, you know, being on the receiving end of that plate, you were the one putting that out, bringing that experience to the next Clayton Chapman that was, you know, coming and sitting at the table, having their first tasting menu and experiencing that. So how cool is that? Well, if people want to know what is going on with Untamed Kitchen or Chef Clayton Chapman, where can people find out what's happening?
Yeah. So if you're looking for what's going on with Untamed Kitchen,
yes,
you can find us at untamedkitchen.com. That'll list kind of like our about, our menu, any events that we have coming up. You can also do online ordering through our website. So you can do online ordering. You can do delivery through our website.
Nice.
You can find us on Uber Eats. You can find us on Grubhub. You can find us on DoorDash if you don't feel like physically coming into the restaurant.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you want to find us on like Facebook or Instagram, it's at eatuntamedkitchen.com. No, just at Eat Untamed Kitchen. There's no .com there.
Right, right. You're on social.
Yeah. No. And then if you're looking to find Clayton, you can look me up at chefclaytonchapman.com.
For those out there that are listening, I would definitely recommend doing that because there's a lot of accolades here. Clayton has been very, very humble in our discussion here, but he's been talked about a few times. So you might want to go out there to his website too and see what's going on. So. Clayton, thank you so much for taking time out of your day and for talking with me about food. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much for the opportunity.
Well, I can pretty much guarantee I'm going to see you down at Untamed Kitchen because, you know, it's delicious and I love eating there. So we'll see you soon.
All right, appreciate it.
Sounds good.
Thanks so much.
You bet. Well, and as we say on this show, this is Dave Zorko with Fatter Day Omaha. And until we eat again, stay hungry. Bye.
Our show is recorded and produced by Fatter Day Omaha. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, as well as email fatterdayomaha@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and stay hungry.
Fatter Day Omaha.
Eat this.